give me one shot here on a blue chip stock, believe me, Kevin, the only problem you're going to have is that you didn't buy more.
Nobody knows if the stock is going to go up, down, sideways, or in circles.
Going on, NBA draft fans, your boys are back. The Wolves of Ball Street, your favorite draft analyst, your boys from the Draft Deck NBA Draft Podcast. My name is Corey Tulliba, and I am here, as always, with my co-host, Albert. Garbage time again. Albert, what is good, my dude?
What is going on? We are coming off the heels of an unbelievable YouTube live stream yesterday, which was just honestly so fun. I had the time of my life. But here we are. We're going to do some recapping of the lottery and how things went. So I'm excited, man. Yesterday was a trip, but we're back home, right? We got home court advantage.
Yes.
And we're gonna have some fun.
Yeah, yesterday was just an amazing experience for everybody from the No Ceilings family. We, you know, really successful live stream, and we owe all that success to our listeners, to our viewers on the YouTube channel. We hosted a Spaces on Twitter. Nick and Alex crushed it. Absolutely crushed it. That was a huge thing for us yesterday as well, something that I think that we're going to continue to try to do a little bit more often. So thanks everybody for rocking with us, man. This first year of No Ceilings has just been a blessing. It's been a blessing working with the entire staff, and thank you for continuing to show all your unwavering support for the Draft Act podcast. I know Albert and I, you know, means so much to us, and you know, we're gearing up to bring you guys some good episodes in the coming weeks and month leading into the NBA draft. And look, we gotta talk to you guys about some of the lottery results too, because you know, things shook out, things happened. And you know, Albert, I think the most important thing for you personally is that the Knicks didn't jump up, but hey, they didn't fall back either.
And Corey, the more I think about it, and I said this even before the days leading up to the lottery, I don't remember if I said it to you or where I said it, but sitting at 11th is a primo spot. There is absolutely nothing wrong with the Knicks sitting at 11, because especially considering this draft and the way that we have these prospects in these tiers, I feel like the Knicks are sitting pretty at 11. I feel like we're going to have the full gamut of like really talented wings for us to choose from. So I'm not tripping out. I'm not freaking out. I'm really happy with where the Knicks ended up, although it's not the first pick like I was hoping, but sitting at 11th instead of first, not as bad as people might think.
Yeah. Somebody's dropping to the Knicks. Somebody interesting is dropping to that 11th spot. There's going to be a lot of wing talent available. And I think that, you know, that's something that we talked about and we've been discussing, is that the Knicks don't need a point guard as much as they need like versatile, switchy wings that can play up and down a lineup and kind of modernize the way they look as far as their roster construction. I mean, let's start it off. Sacramento, they moved up from 7 to 4. They were the big jump. They got into the top four, and now they're in the same awkward spot that I think some of us kind of foreseen Oklahoma City being in. You know, Rucker and I are going to be writing a piece for No Ceilings, kind of discussing the concept of fit versus best player available, and you know, at what part of the draft does each one make sense, and where does that line meet? Where do they intersect? Because at some point, best player available or best talent available, if you're not putting that player in the right position to succeed, are you really fulfilling that talent that you thought was greater than another prospect, right? If there are guys that are just that play the same position, crowded everywhere, and maybe you're not playing in the right context, that player may look a little bit worse than they would if they played in a completely different context with a different team, with a different coach and a different system. So, but Sacramento is kind of vaulted into that spot. Whereas at first it was Oklahoma City saying, can Ivy fit with SGA and Trey Mann and Giddy when we want to see him with the ball in his hands more. Now we're shifting back to Sacramento and saying, does Jaden Ivey fit in Sacramento next to De'Aaron Fox and Davion Mitchell? right? Mm-hmm. And even Sabonis is going to have the ball a lot of times. And, you know, they traded Halliburton because the backcourt was seemingly a bit too crowded. So right. Do you think they jump right back into putting that added pressure on the backcourt?
I think it's interesting, Corey, because like I've heard, I think it was on the Bill Simmons pod, they're talking about like, okay, what if there's a trade on the table, like the Knicks with Randall and 11 for the fourth pick? And I'm just like, well, okay, maybe in NBA 2K, but what I'm trying right. to understand is, dude, De'Aaron Fox had a really strong end of the season. And the funny thing is they mentioned it on their pod too, and how he had like, he was averaging like 29 a game or something like that. Yeah. I don't even remember the exact numbers, but it's like, okay, so how do these two things live together in the same reality? Like, what exactly are we talking about here? So I think that's interesting. I also have an extra grind with J. Kyle Mann because he said some stuff about Davion. I know, yeah, but he said some things about Davion in passing. And I was
we'll
like,
bring that up to him when he comes on the show.
He was like, oh, you know, with playoff basketball, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, Marcus Smart has made a hell of a career and an impact in the playoffs. So even anyway,
a guy like Peyton Pritchard had it for the Celtics, God, had yeah. an impact too.
Exactly. Exactly. So anyway, we'll move on from that. So with the Kings, though, I think it's interesting, right? As much as I just bashed on the possibility of them trading Fox, let's say in some no, I just can't see it. No, I'm not even going to talk about it because I don't see that happening. So if anything, I think they'll just pass on Ivy. Mm. And maybe that's just the move that they make, because what happens with Fox, Davion, and Ivy when, as you just mentioned, they moved off of Halliburton because they thought they had a really crowded backcourt? Why would you add Ivy to that? I don't understand that rationale
Who isn't as clean as a fit as Halliburton was.
Exactly. I mean, Halliburton gave them shooting, like, and tons of it. And he was one of the best spot up shooters in the league, right? So that's confusing to me. And hey, Corey, like we mentioned yesterday, I mean, we brought up Shaedon Sharpe a ton, right? Like Sharp yep. is going to be an option there potentially if they fall in love with AJ Griffin. Benedict Mathurin is a guy who can sneak into the top five. Not that I would ever do that, but sure. it could easily happen. So there are a ton of wings there that they could fall in love with. I mean,
Keegan Murray,
who's to say,
you didn't even mention Keegan,
right? Who's to say they don't fall in love with Dyson Daniels or Johnny Davis and take them at four? So I think the Kings are going to have a lot of options there. I just don't see the Ivy fit making sense at all, considering not just like the team fit, but what the organization just did in the middle of the season.
Now, let me throw a curveball at you. Maybe this is an easy answer. I still think it fits into our conversation we're having here about fit versus best player available and like where that line meets. What if Paolo Banchero falls? What if he doesn't go in the top three? What if he falls to the Kings at four? Because look, there's nothing, set in stone. This isn't me reporting that this is going to happen, but there's a little chatter out there.
Yeah.
If you talk to the right people, that Paolo could be a guy out of that group who slides a little bit on draft night. And we see this every year where we think guys are set in stone, that they have to go in a specific order in a specific spot. And every year we learn that that's wrong because we're not taking into account the variables of personalities in front offices that have specific beliefs and feelings and thoughts about these players.
Bingo.
What if Paolo Banchero is the guy who slides to the fourth pick?
I can 100% see that happening, right? And not that I agree with it either, but I mean, you hear the whispers, right, of him being, having some personality, blah, 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 which I think is nonsense, But I don't know. And you know what, Corey? Something that I want to give you credit for. About like a week ago, 2 weeks ago, we were talking about Paolo and you described him as a jumbo wing. Yeah. And that kind of gave me a really big, like almost like a paradigm shift in terms of how I started to view Paolo, because I think it's easy to box Paolo into the mold of your traditional four, but he may not be that at all. he may be able to even play at, like, as you mentioned, like a wing with the ball handling and the shot creation and the passing, of course. I mean, even before the season started, we raved about his passing, even from the stuff that we saw in high school. And I think I don't believe he even fully got to show that off in college at all. So if we see more of that with the ball handling and the shot creation, I think things get really, really interesting where I could see him pairing with Sabonis, no problem. From what I might be crazy, and hey, to my credit, I didn't watch every goddamn Kings game this past season, and I think I'm going to allow myself that. But Sabonis did play a good amount of five for them, from what I understand. And so if that's going to be the case, then you play Sabonis at the five, but Banchero at the 4-3. I don't know how you want to play that. Obviously, defensively, there might be some questions there, but
sure.
It's not like you play those two guys 48 minutes together.
Right.
You know, there you can stagger. You can do all kinds of things. So I don't hate that idea at all.
And you know, again, you mentioned that the defensive fit is not clean by any stretch of the imagination, but they can run some really intriguing stuff with Sabonis and Paolo, like inverted pick and rolls. I think both of those guys can run pick and roll for each other. And then, you know, the whole aspect of seeing how they play with these guards. Now, in that scenario, you wonder, you go, where the hell is the shooting coming from, right? Like, they need to just surround that entire roster with just shooters in every single direction, but they're all toolsy enough that, I mean, they're not going to run the best offense in the league, but they will at least be able to run some creative things, I think. Mm-hmm. But look, this is all hypothetical because I honestly don't think Paolo is going to fall outside of the top three. I still think he's going to go in the top two, but it's just something to take into consideration because
This
top four could be a dice roll. It could be, and look, that offense will be clunky with Ivy too. The offense will be clunky with Ivy too.
Yeah,
because
sure.
Even though I believe in Ivy as a shooter, I believe him as a spot up shooter. I believe in him and his ability to play off handoffs with Sabonis. I believe in his ability, you know, with the ball in his hands in transition in the half court. I mean, how dynamic of a backcourt. It's got to be the fastest backcourt ever with Davion, Darren Fox, and Jaden Ivy. But it's just interesting. Mm-hmm. Orlando won the number one pick again.
Mm-hmm.
They get that. They've had some good luck winning the number one pick in their short franchise's history. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of teams would prefer to have that kind of lottery luck.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about where they go.
Okay.
There's some betting odds out.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think is atop the odds?
My guess would be probably, I don't want to put my own bias into it. Let's say it's Jabari right now.
It is Jabari.
Okay, thank God.
It's Jabari minus 130.
Okay.
Followed by Chet plus 160.
Mm.
Paolo plus 475.
Wow.
Not bad. Those are pretty good odds for Paolo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ivy plus 3,300. Sharp plus 3,300. And this is real. I'm not joking. You actually could, in certain books, bet Kai Soto at plus 50,000.
Oh, my God. I had one hell of a day with the Kai Soto army. So it's fun. It's fun.
You actually can. You can bet on it.
Oh, boy.
So Jabari's the favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Chet's not far behind. Sell me on Orlando why they should take Jabari as the favorite.
Oh, boy. So, Corey, like in preparation of this pod, I actually was breaking down Orlando just by myself and thinking I could see any of the top three guys going to them and Orlando being really happy with it. Is how I feel right now because they have like this nice stable of guards. Markel is a guy who, when he's healthy, he seems to really enjoy playing with the Magic. He had Spurs before he got hurt, and then even when he came back this past season,
came back strong.
He, He did. He really did. And they played well with him. Obviously, the Franz love is real, and I think it's deservedly so. Like, Franz was a guy you and I, we loved last year in that draft class. So it's great to see that panned out. Obviously, you know, they have Hampton, they have Cole Anthony, they have all these guys. What the hell is going to happen with Jonathan Isaac? Nobody knows. And do I care? I'm not sure if I care about that either. But anyway, also the whole Mamba situation and all that stuff. But okay, so for Jabari, here we go. Like, I think there's enough creation on that Orlando team where Jabari's not going to be throwing the ball and asked to, like, hey, kid, go get a shot for us. Or, hey, kid, here are the keys to the offense. Figure it out. I don't think he's going to have that pressure on him. He can play off of Markel. He can play off of Franz. And he'll kind of be the third option, fourth option a lot of the time. And in my opinion, Corey, that's kind of the perfect situation for Jabari. If you were to come up with, like, this awesome plan for his career trajectory, I don't think you want to put him in a position where from day one, he's the number one or number two option. He's a guy that needs time. Shouts to Rucker. He's a guy that absolutely needs time. The shooting, great. Okay. Defense, I like a lot.
Yeah.
What's there not to like? The length, the competitive. The dude gets into a full-on stance defensively.
Oh, yeah.
Great. I love that. Effort, energy, intensity, great. The handle is a real question. And I know, like, some people, they're trying to, like, zag a little bit. It's like, oh, I thought he can't dribble. And he does, like, some stuff behind his back through his legs. And I'm like, all right. I don't think anyone said he can't dribble. I think the question is, if he's going to be a number one option, he's got to dribble it a little bit better, a little bit tighter. Yes. It's, I think, fair. Jesus Christ. I think it's hilarious how sometimes, like, you say one thing and it's like, oh, you're the complete op. You're hating on this guy. It's like, well, can we be critical? Can we be objective? Is that okay?
Right.
So anyway, with Jabari, Corey, if I'll wrap up, I think he makes sense on this Magic team. I think so do Chet and Paolo. But specifically for Jabari, like, if I were Jabari and I ended up on the Magic, I wouldn't be pissed about it. I think there's plenty on that team. I didn't even mention Wendell Carter Jr., who, you know, I thought he had a pretty decent season this past season as well. So there's a lot to like.
I agree with you that Jabari's ultimate, I don't know, I wouldn't say ultimate ceiling, because, you know, his ultimate ceiling involves him actually working on his handle to a point where he, you know, has a solid dribble. But I think his most likely outcome is he's kind of like Jaren Jackson Jr., right? Nice. And that's a third option, right? Like, I think maybe Jabari has a little bit more of that mid-range face-up, like, shoot over you, the fadeaway. Maybe he can use the pump fake into, like, the 1-2 dribble attack. I think he has that, where I trust that a little bit more than Jaren Jackson Jr. But ultimately, I think on, like, a championship level team, he's probably a number three, because he doesn't have those wing skills. And I think you need those wing skills to be a one or a two. They're missing, Orlando's missing the one and the two still, right? Like, they still are. You mentioned all those guys, and they're individually, you could pick out good things. It's a little crowded. I think they need to thin it out a little bit, and hopefully Jalen Suggs takes a step, and maybe he could be the number two guy if he takes a step. I'm a little weary of that, but if he ends up being, like, your number four, and every once in a while he could serve as, like, your number two when he gets hot or is feeling it, and I still believe in Suggs. But the Jabari to Orlando thing, if you're looking for to me, it's very uninspiring. If you're like, this is the guy that's going to shift the future of my franchise, right? I'm a little weary of that. Maybe Franz is the number two. Maybe Franz is the number two, and they need the number one guy is what they're missing.
Right.
Maybe that's a more accurate depiction. My bad, Franz. My bad. We did an episode about him called The Value of Versatility. I think, you know, I think we're fans.
Yeah.
So, but I've heard the people say Jabari might give Orlando, like, you know, finally that number one guy they could build around. I'm not seeing it there. Paolo, maybe I see that a little bit more if they go that direction, where I could actually see Paolo being a number one option on an NBA team. Chet, I also don't see being a number one option on an NBA team, but I think he could be that 2-3, probably similar to what Jabari tops out as. But I think that Chet, for a guy who is kind of slept on for his handle a little bit, but people talk about his half-court creation, I think he's got a lot more in his bag than Jabari does. And that's with not even getting to show a ton of that bag in college. I think he's just a much more fluid ball handler. And just even like some of the spins that he does, that's kind of his signature move, where he'll like just roll off your shoulder to either side and just use that length to attack the rim.
Right.
I think that I would, that plus 160 bet, that to me is, that's the move for Orlando. It fits the John Hammond, you know, history of all the guys that he's taken in the past, between Giannis and John Henson and Larry Sanders and Thon Maker, I think, was in there. Like all these guys, Chet fits it, and he's the ultimate version of that. He is the one. He is the guy. Right. Well, you know, obviously Giannis is the ultimate version, but outside of the Giannis pick, like Chet is the one. To me, that's the guy Orlando has to draft. You know, my buddy texted me. He's a Magic fan. Right after, and he was like, "All right, draft expert. Like, who we taking?" And I just like, Chet, take Chet, please take Chet. And he's like, "Yeah, but we already have Wendell and Mo Bamba." And like, I was like, "It doesn't matter. Trade them. Take Chet and figure it out." I don't think any of these guys fix Orlando's problem of that no brainer can't miss superstar, but I don't know. Or look, Orlando winning the lottery definitely helps them. Getting put in a position to choose Chet puts them in a good spot, but I can't help but feel like Chet is getting a little bit of the Luka discussion, where you're just people are looking for reasons to not buy in on Chet. Like they were looking for reasons to not buy in on Luka. Oh, he's only doing it in the EuroLeague. He's not going to be able to do it against NBA guys. He's going to be too slow. He's not athletic enough. Like all this stuff. Like I feel like Chet's getting the Luka treatment right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also, Corey, really quickly, shouts to your friend, the Magic fan.
Like, Felice.
I don't know any Magic fans. Like I think they should just take the Marine slogan, the few, the proud, the Magic.
You know what, though? I'm a little shocked that there aren't more Magic fans. And I'll tell you why. Because my age group specifically.
Oh, yeah.
There was nothing cooler than the Orlando Magic.
Yeah.
Nothing. Yeah. Penny was, he was the coolest. And this is during Jordan, you know, like he was up there as cool or cooler than Michael Jordan. And I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, he's playing next to Shaq, who was obviously very cool back then. And the fact that they had the best basketball jerseys that were ever made, and the Magic continuously move away from them as their primary jerseys and give us all this alternative garbage when they have, you know, Yankee pinstripes waiting for them in the closet. I'll never understand it, but it is what it is. But I'm a little surprised there aren't more lagging Magic fans from my generation, just because of that, because I think those teams were really popular.
Yeah. I'm with you, man. Nick Anderson, whatever happened to him, was rough. But overall, dude, I'm with you on Chet. Like I said this before too, and I think Corey, I think you're there with me with what you just said. Chet's in his own tier. Yeah, and I think people may disagree, whatever, for that's us. Fine. It's for me. It's for us. It's for a lot of us at No Ceilings. I think Chet's in his own tier. And I think you have to remember he played next to Drew Timmy. And Timmy had the ball in his hands a lot and was doing post-ups and stuff. It wasn't always the most fun and not the most NBA-ish situation for Chet. So I'm ready for Chet to shock the world, or maybe not shock the world, but to prove his haters wrong. And like, everyone's going to bring up his frame. Russillo brought it up a ton. It's like his major red flag with him. And I don't want to fight people on that, because who knows, right? But I'll just say, I've seen Chet play live. I stood literally right next to him for like 30 minutes while he warmed up for the game. Like I could have easily just like slapped him on the back and said, "Good job, kid." But, he's not as skinny as he looks. And if you watch him even in warmups, the skills on that guy, it's just silly. It's absolute silly. So I would be very happy for Magic fans if they got Chet at number one. And in my opinion, that's the appropriate pick.
Yeah, I agree. To me, I would run to the podium to draft Chet there and build out the roster accordingly around him, as him and Franz, as I see fit. Well, come on. Franz and Chet in the front court. What are we doing here? I love it.
Hey, Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I want to shift a little bit and talk about four prospects, and not really talk about four prospects, but talk about them pulling out of the combine. I'm talking about Peyton Watson, Jaden Hardy, JD Davison, and Max Christie. These guys decided that they don't want to play. Maybe they have promises, maybe not. But it was a little shocking when it was announced that these guys pulled out. And then our man, Bones Highland, Denver Nuggets fame, second team all rookie.
He went off.
Tweets out, coming from somebody who went through the draft process and seen everything, I can honestly say they hate when players don't play in caps. They came there to see you play. Why be scared to go out there and play? One game can put you on top. I never respected those type players.
Sheesh.
Shots fired from Bones.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Sage wisdom from the one-year veteran.
I love it.
No, I can't agree more. Couldn't agree more, Corey.
Those guys need to play.
They do. They do. Okay, actually, all right, Corey, can I ask you this? Of the four, who were you the most okay with not playing and pulling out?
Hardy.
Same. Okay, this is why we're co-hosts. I feel exactly the same. And for me, Corey, the rationale is he played against NBA guys all season.
Yeah, that's so, it for me. There's
exactly, yeah.
What more does he have to prove? Sure, if he gets hot and it's kind of like, all right, so you played against NBA guys and you have this body of work that we can go to. But I guess if you get hot and you measure yourself, now it's almost like you're playing down a level playing against college kids,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
It's a pickup setting, which may be a good kind of setting for him. But, you know, you don't know how many shots you're getting. Everybody's looking for their own shot. It's it's not like, to me, I'm okay with Hardy. I don't feel that. Right. Now, he's a guy that is getting mocked in the second even. So to say that he doesn't need a good showing and that it couldn't help him, I think is wrong. I think if he showed out a good showing, certainly could have helped Jaden. But I mean, Peyton Watson, JD Davison, Max Christie, like, I mean, these guys need it. They need to play.
Yeah. Yeah. I Corey, my biggest thing, Watson barely played. Like he truly barely played the season. So why not? What are you tired? Are you, what's going on there, right?
Christie, he might have played the most minutes of the whole season in this game.
Exactly. For Christie, he sat in the corner for most of the season. Why not venture out of the corner and show NBA teams that you can do more than that?
Right, so play with the ball in your hands.
Giant question mark for me. JD Davison, like you had a really bad season. Why not go out there and show them like, hey, don't define me by one season. Define me, or not define me, but look what I can do here. You know, like his stock plummeted. So why not go out there and wreck some guys? Look, let's imagine, Corey, they're playing this pickup style of ball, and he just absolutely takes like four or five guys' heads at the rim.
Yeah,
that's not going to help his stock. I think it will. Let's say he hit like two out of five threes in a game, and they go, suddenly they're like, oh, he hit two threes.
Right.
Oh, the form's not bad. And he dunked on four guys' heads. It's the narrative can shift just like that. So I hate it. I'm with you. The only one I can understand is Hardy for me.
Absolutely. I agree. Shout out to everybody watching live in the chat. I Make Music says, if Hardy was as athletic as Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga, he would be a top five pick. Agreed. Agreed. But he's not. So he's not a top five pick. And coming into the year, we had him. He was my number one overall guy. He was a top five pick coming into the year. He didn't show enough consistency, but he's still a guy that we like. Albert, you've been steady on the Hardy train.
Yeah.
The whole season.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the one idiot on planet Earth that still has him in my top 10. So maybe I'm the problem here, but my thing with Corey, and I've said this a million times, so I'm a broken record at this point, but I like the fact that he played against adults. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that he wasn't afraid to try stuff. I like the fact that he failed at a lot of different things because, I mean, in my opinion, Corey, and maybe this is just me, but I feel like I've always learned the most in my life when I failed the hardest.
Yeah. So how does a player respond to adversity?
Exactly. And hello, look at how he finished the season. Like, yeah, he failed and he had really rough moments. You went to see him live and he played like ass, but watch the last four games of the season. Tell me he didn't grow as a playmaker. Tell me he didn't find some composure and like level-headedness as a player. It's hard for me to give up on him. I'm the psychopath. I get it. But I still think there's enough there to be like, I think he worked out a lot of different things in the G League and tried new things. So I kind of think he's a better player because of it. So.
Look, when we had Rashad Phillips on the show to talk about Jaden Hardy, you know, we talked about how his outcome could be he's Buddy Hield, right? I think that's a realistic outcome for a guy like him. I think the shot making is going to translate, even if the percentages weren't what you would hope for. I think that role, moving off ball, running off screens, coming off pin downs, attacking off movement, coming off handoffs, all that stuff, I think that's stuff he could do. And if he turns into a Buddy Hield type guy, are you going to regret taking Buddy Hield with the 10th pick?
Nope.
I don't think so. Right. Like any player that you pick that actually hits with a pick like that, you're probably going to count as a win. So if that's an outcome that I could certainly see for Hardy, and you look at him like, you know, we've mocked him a lot to a team like Denver. Right. And maybe Denver is a weird fit from the perspective that they have Bones, they have Jamal Murray, you know, they have guys that are kind of like him. So maybe it's a little crowded, but theoretically, like you put him with a guy like Jokic who makes players better, especially guys who move without the ball. And, you know, then all of a sudden he starts knocking down shots. He's having this year, this quote unquote surprising year, because he looks better than he did, you know, in the G League where he was put in uncomfortable spots. And all of a sudden he starts looking more like that guy that we thought he was coming into the season. That's an outcome that I could see. I could also see him going to a team where there's a crowded backcourt. He's struggling to find minutes when he comes in, you know, he's not, you know, playing as composed as he was at the end of the G League season. He's forcing the issue a little bit. And he looks a little bit more chucky than, you know, anything else. That's an outcome too. And it takes him a couple of years to figure it out. So, but that's the fun with this guessing game of the draft that we're playing. You know, we're trying to take educated guesses and form hypotheses about all of these players. So Mr. Ray in the chat says, quotes Albert, "I'm the psychopath. I get it." Albert expressing my feelings in regards to how I feel about Johnny Davis and his ceiling being much higher than we might perceive it to be. Johnny Davis had himself a measurement.
He did.
Almost 6'6".
Yeah.
I was floored. I was shocked. I thought he was going to measure closer to like 6'3", maybe 6'4" in shoes. 6'6" in shoes. Plus wingspan. I think he was like 6'9"-ish. I'm forgetting, but off the top of my head. That's huge. To me, that puts him in. I'm with Mr. Ray. I know I want you to opine about Johnny real quick, because I know you've been preaching the gospel, as you like to say.
So, Corey, for me, the crazy thing is I realized I'm such an idiot. Like, I almost never post my personal board. So I think that's why, like, I think people don't really know where I'm at with most of these players.
Yeah.
My latest board, like my absolute latest board, I have Johnny Davis at 4. I just don't talk about it. I don't know what's wrong with me. I have to do more of that where I put my stuff out there a little bit more. Maybe
put it out there.
I'm a bad self-promoter.
You have a podcast.
Yeah.
You're out there.
Okay. So I have Davis at 4. And the reason why is I'm with you, Mr. Ray. I think with Davis, if I can, like my thing with him is like, I like guys who play that hard, which is like a big reason why I love Dale and Terry too. It's like these guys, like, and I think Simmons talks about it a lot too. And this is not some Bill Simmons propaganda podcast or anything like that.
By the way, Jalen Green just tweeted out, shout out Bill Simmons, that's my dog for real. Which is unbelievable.
Petty wars. But with Davis, like, he has the give a shit factor that you're looking for. He's a guy that, as hey, Metcalf is the absolute professor on this, but he played on a rough team, man. He really did. And I think the shooting, for me, eye test wise, I think, like, I heard KOC talking about it and saying, like, oh, you know, if he can extend it out to three, I think he has already extended it out to three. I think he's going to be just fine. And that's just my opinion. Once again, I like the off the dribble stuff. I think I truly do believe that he's more malleable and versatile in terms of fit than people give him credit for. Like, I don't think he's going to come in year one and be like, hey, so like, I need the ball in my hands. He just doesn't come off as a diva to me at all. I think he'll be willing to play off ball. I think he'll be willing to do all kinds of things. And defensively, he's going to go out there and be like, that best guy on the other team, he's mine. Mm. And that's exciting, you know? So, yeah, I need to promote this better. But yeah, I have Davis fourth on my board. So I'm with you, Mr. Ray. I love him.
I love the take. And look, the measurements, maybe the measurements shouldn't always play a part in how you feel about a prospect. You know, it's like last year, you know, I was so certain that Davion Mitchell was going to be a good NBA player that I looked and he came in, I think at like 6'1 in shoes, or I think it was with like a 6'4, 6'4 and a half wingspan. And I was like, I don't care. I watched him on tape the whole year and he had an impact on winning. And I know his defense is going to translate. I saw how he gave Cade Cunningham fits with all of the extra size that Cade brought. I saw that. But, you know, for me, like, I look at Johnny now and I see the extra size and I go, okay, well, maybe he could scale up a little bit more now. And that interests me. I see the way that, you know, my argument was always like Mathurin was a guy that maybe should go ahead of Johnny because I could see him playing up in lineups a little bit more. But if Johnny's really going to be close to 6'6",
right,
what's the argument against that? That to me solidifies that I should move him up a little bit because some of the concerns that I had maybe were unfounded. And I don't know what it was about him that made him look smaller. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the way he's put together because he's very compact, right? Like I think he's got good length, but he's like strong and he's compact. But his size has definitely swayed me a little bit. And, you know, we've always said like he has that fun game. Like he reminds you of like Devin Booker a little bit. He reminds me of like a slightly smaller Joe Johnson. So I'm definitely trending up on Johnny. I think those measurements were, at least for me, were a big time positive for him.
No, Corey, I think it makes a big difference because I think some people low-key were expecting him to come in at like 6'3", 6'4". And if he did come in at 6'3", and 6'4", exactly, it could be a totally different discussion because he's in the Ty Washington range then, height-wise. So I totally get it. And the fact that he's like, he's essentially going to be like 6'6", that's awesome. Yeah. It's really awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Was there anything else that you've seen throughout the combine that surprised you at all?
Well, okay, personal thing for me, Dalen Terry over 7 foot wingspan, chef's kiss. That's freaking awesome. Pterodactyl. I love that to death. Obviously Jalen Williams.
Yes.
Also our guy Mark Williams, like he just doesn't have arms. He's got ladders. So that's great, right? That's interesting.
7'7" wingspan.
It's disgusting. What is that? I just don't know. Koloko, his measurements came out great. Koloko is like Williams. Like Koloko, if you watch him live, he'll be standing in the middle of the paint and he's just going one, like the paint is covered. The paint is fully covered. So those are the ones that definitely stuck out to me. It's impressive stuff, man.
Jalen Williams, 7'2.5" wingspan. That's really fun.
We have to do Jalen Williams soon.
Yeah, we got to. I just went on the Draft Deeper podcast, which will be out after our episode of the podcast, since we're streaming live, and you know that episode's not up yet. And Jalen Williams was taken by Nate Can you guess? Take a guess where he was taken.
17th.
He went 15th Charlotte with their second pick. Nate took him with the second pick. Charlotte's second pick at 15. Even Rucker thought that was a little bit spicy, and Rucker's been driving the Jalen Williams hype train for a lot of the college season. But part of me is like, I definitely think that he can bring back that lottery type value that you would expect from a guy who was being taken 15. And you look at the measurables, he's going to be able to guard at least 1 through 4. Jesus. Out on switches, right? Like, you're not going to put him on fours full time, but you're going to be able to put him out there on the perimeter and hope that he can bother guys with length, especially more of these like wingy guys. I love the ball handling. I love the playmaking out of the pick and roll. Maybe the best pick and roll playmaker in the whole draft. The off the ball shooting, the on the ball shooting. There's a lot to like. You're right. We have to do an episode on him for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. Let me pump the brakes a little bit so we don't go like 40 minutes on him and it turns into a Jalen Williams episode. But yeah, there's a lot to like there.
Because we got to do an episode on.
We have to.
All right. I think that's. Do you have anything else on your mind
before we go? Let me see. I want to go through my notes really quick. Oh, okay. So I want to have this conversation, and I think this is a perfect place to end because it's kind of like middle of the lottery. Can we talk about the Pacers before we go? Cause I feel like we never talk about the Pacers on our pod, and we've got some Pacers fans, right?
Yeah. Shout out to the Indiana Pacers fans. Indiana's a huge basketball culture.
For sure. Exactly. A thought crossed my mind, Corey, thinking about the Pacers and the direction they can go. They've got Halliburton, they've got Hield, they've got Turner, they've got Duarte, you know, they've got these guys. So I was thinking about who they can grab at six, because they're another team that I think is going to be in a prime position to grab a really, really good player. So I thought about Branham. And then I thought about Dyson Daniels. And the question that I want to throw at you is, do you feel like the Pacers at six is like the peak spot for Dyson Daniels? Like the highest he'll go is what I was thinking.
Okay. I don't think Sacramento or Detroit would take him.
Me too.
So if we're thinking Daniels at six, that means that we're assuming what? Chet, Jabari, Paolo, Shaden, Ivy off the board?
Yeah.
So that leaves us between, are you taking what consensus would take in Keegan Murray?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you throwing a curveball with Dyson Daniels?
Right.
I don't think it's out of the question.
Mm-hmm.
Because although I think that Murray is also a guy that you could take and see going as high as four,
mm-hmm.
it also wouldn't shock me if he fell to like Portland at seven.
Mm.
And Dyson Daniels is a kid. He measured 7.75 inches, almost 6'11 wingspan. And another guy who played against pros, was productive against pros. Arguably the best perimeter defender in the draft, doesn't need to play with the ball in his hands.
Right.
Right. So you're not killing Halliburton and putting him in another situation where he doesn't have the ball in his hands, because Halliburton earned that right to be the primary playmaker.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of play him like a wing. You're now looking at, you know, a Halliburton, Duarte, Dyson Daniels, as of now, Miles Turner, and maybe like Isaiah Jackson type thing. You got a ton of size, some versatility. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
Corey, my rationale behind it, like I just started thinking, oh, that could be where it starts for Dyson Daniels in terms of consideration, because those names that you just rattled off, that's a really fun young core. Yeah. You mentioned Halliburton's earned the right to have the ball in his hands, but also in a really like weird way, that experience in Sacramento was also kind of a blessing, because he showed the world, I can also play with the ball out of my hands.
Right.
I can do both. I'm that versatile.
I don't need to be a heliocentric creator. I can play in any system.
Exactly. And then they still have Heald. They have Duarte. Duarte, a guy who also can do a little bit with the ball in his hand. So you have a very dynamic stable of guys who can do a little something, something with the ball in their hands. And then you talk about the passing of Halliburton, the passing of Dyson Daniels. And there's a lot of versatility with how that ball is going to move on that squad. And then you have Isaiah Jackson, who started to show a little bit with that jump shot. And then he can obviously be an easy roll dive man. So I thought that that was an intriguing spot to start considering Dyson Daniels is what I wanted to say.
I love it. I love it. I mean, you know, we're high on Dyson Daniels. We just covered him. He's going to be a really good NBA player. He's big, he's versatile, he's switchable, he's skilled, he's got a high IQ. He's all the things that you see out of these successful guys who come into the league and have like that quick success, right? Because and he might be even in a better position than some of these guys because he already understands what it takes to play in an NBA system, playing for the G League Ignite, has pro experience. So yeah, I still think ultimately I would take Keegan.
Yeah.
But you have to have the conversation because exactly. Dyson Daniels is 18. He offers all those things we talked about. Keegan Murray, tremendous. Love him. Hard to really point out flaws in his game. The biggest flaw in his game that when people talk about Keegan is that he's good at a lot of things.
It's my least favorite argument. You know that one.
Okay, he's good at a lot of things. But, yeah. You know, so outside of his age, which, you know, look, that's for a lot of people, the age thing matters a lot. To me, when a guy is just really good at basketball and he brings all of the winning intangibles, and I saw him live, I saw how he warmed up, I saw the way he approached the game, I saw how he played during the game, his level of focus, how he was locked in with his teammates and the timeouts. I saw all that from behind the bench, checked all the boxes, was unbelievably productive in a really good conference in college basketball. So to me, it's hard to say that he doesn't have more potential than he's shown. I think, you know, he would be a really good fit with that core as well. Indiana's in a good spot because, you know, you could even see one of the guards falling to them, right? Like, you know, if Keegan goes in that top five, that means that presumably one of Ivy or Shaedon Sharpe is going to fall as well. And then you have that conversation. So Indiana's in an interesting position. I know that their fans are probably upset because I believe they were one of the teams that got pushed down a little bit, but they'll still get themselves a good player, I think.
Right. No, I agree. And also getting pushed down isn't always the end of the world. And it's the same philosophy that it's the same feeling that I have with the Knicks. Like, yeah, they didn't go number 11. Good. No problem. So that's all I've got.
So who's the guy for you right now? You know, now, you know, the Knicks are locked in at 11. You know, on my YouTube channel, NBA Draft Dude, I actually, you know, I've been doing these team-centric big boards, and today I released my New York Knicks big board. So who do you, out of like the realistic targets for you, who is your number one guy? Is it Dyson?
So I guess it depends on how you define realistic, right? Because like the way things are going, I feel like Johnny Davis might be there.
Yeah, no, Johnny Davis was on my board for the Knicks. And honestly, I kind of did it before measurements and stuff. And if I could go back, I would switch him and Mathurin in the order. But I think so. Johnny Davis is, that would be the dream for you.
I think I'd freak out, Corey, have a conniption if the Knicks got Johnny Davis at 11. Like, I wouldn't really know what to do with myself. Back in 18 when the Knicks got, or was it 18? Yeah, it was 18, right? Or 20? I don't remember. 2020. When the Knicks got RJ Barrett, that was 2020. I bought that jersey like that night that we drafted.
2019.
Correct. You're right. If the Knicks grab Johnny Davis, I'll be doing the same thing. I'll be placing that order the night of the draft because that would be unreal. After Johnny Davis, if Dyson Daniels is somehow there, I would love Dyson Daniels there. And then if Mathurin's there, sure, no problem. I love Mathurin. I would, Corey, this is just me. People might say I'm crazy. If Agbaji's there, I'm not against it. I'm not against that at all. Are you kidding me? You're telling me Tibbs won't fall in love with Ochai Agbaji? Knicks fans will love Ochai Agbaji. Do you see what he measured at, with his Max Vert today at the combine? No problemo. He'd be a great fit too.
Watched him in the garden. Kansas versus Michigan State, put on a show in the Garden, plays well there. Yeah. Agbaji, when in one of the mocks, I don't remember if it was Sports Illustrated or Bleacher Report, but Agbaji fell to the Bulls at 18. And I was like, okay, I'm starting to feel something down low. Let's, wow. You know, if he falls there, I just couldn't explain. Yeah. How happy I'd be. But ultimately I think he gets taken. Like, I think Cleveland has got to have a real long talk with themselves about Agbaji for sure. Even Charlotte, they have two picks depending on, you know, who's available, who's on the board.
Right.
But yeah, I think if the Knicks took Agbaji, that's, how are you going to argue against a wing with plus athleticism, plus shooting ability, and not just standstill, off movement, can do enough with the ball in his hands, attacking closeouts, 1-2 dribble pull-ups, and led his team to a national championship.
Boom. Boom.
Sell me this pen on that shit.
Corey, one name I forgot to mention, Malachi Branham, too. So once again, it's like 5-6 deep in terms of options there for the Knicks at 11. So I'm not losing sleep over it.
You're gonna have a good night.
Hell yeah.
Who's your nightmare?
Oh, my nightmare for the Knicks at 11, right?
Blake Wesley.
My nightmare would absolutely 1,000,000,000% be Blake Wesley. If the Knicks took Blake Wesley at 11, I might just not watch basketball next season.
I'm trying to figure out who the Blake Wesley team is, because we keep hearing like potential lotto buzz. So I'm trying to figure out what team makes sense.
Just please not.
It's going to be a mystery until draft night. That's all we'll say. All right, Albert, tell the people where they could find you on the WWWs.
You can find me at Alberto Gim on Twitter is where you'll find me. You'll find me talking about random stuff. And you know what, Corey, I'm going to do it. I'm gonna finally post a big board. Maybe I'll do it this week, actually, because it's about damn time. I don't know why I haven't done it, but I will do that this week.
Drop it like a flex bomb, man.
Bang.
Shout out again to everybody watching live on YouTube. Shout out to our listeners that are listening on Spotify and Apple. Shout out to everybody who participated in the chat. You can find me at Corey Tulliba on Twitter, NBA Draft Dude on YouTube. No Ceilings TV on YouTube, the Draft Hack, NBA Draft Podcast, obviously Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, share with all your friends. Give us a rating if you feel so inclined to. That would be dope. And thanks, everybody, for the support. Make sure you head to NoCeilingsNBA.com. Subscribe to that. It's free. You'll get it sent directly to your email inbox Monday through Friday. We are going to be loading up on draft content over the next month and a half. So be there or be square, man. Throwing it back old school. That's it. We out. Peace.
Peace.